Let's start. So, if I had to ask the chevra over here, what would be the low part of Moshe Rabbeinu's career? Maybe a good time to hit the rock. But besides right in the beginning of his career, Moshe Rabbeinu over here, Moshe Rabbeinu says, basically, Hashem, like, what's going on? HaKadosh Baruch Hu, they yell at him, they say, Moshe Rabbeinu, he thinks he's coming in. He didn't want to come in the first place. He begged Hashem, he wanted out. He's like, it's not for me. Shach na b'yate shach. He begged Hashem. And Hashem says, no, don't worry. And now, Vayashev, and then the Klal Yisrael says, Yomra Aleim, Yirei Hashem Aleichem, V'yishbod Asher Avishtim Esrechenu B'nei Paro B'nei Avadav, L'asei Yischer B'yadam Aginu, they're going to kill us. Paro says we have to have the same quota of bricks, even though he's not even giving us the straw to build the bricks. So what does Moshe Rabbeinu say? Vayashev Moshe El Hashem, Vayomar, Hashem, lama riosa lama zeh shlachtani. Why are you sending me? What is my job over here? Kosh Baruch Hu responds, Vayomer Hashem al Moshe, ata tireh asher aseh lefaro, ki v'yad chazak yashalchem, v'yad chazak yargarshem etzo. Kosh Baruch Hu responds, don't worry, you're going to see what I'm going to do to Paro, what I'm going to do to the Mitzrayim. So now it's very fascinating, is that it seems like, if you actually look at the Prakim, we know the Prakim were divided, we know by the Christians, but it's like Mamash in the middle. We have the end of the Sof Pasuk's over there, and if you actually look, Parak Vav started at the end of Parshas Va'era, in Shmos rather, and Parshas Va'era just starts like, kind of like in the middle of a sentence, but it's a new point now. And what is the new point? Vaydabra Elokim Moshe Vayomer Elav Ani Hashem. Hashem says to Moshe, Ani Hashem. This Pasuk is very, very difficult to understand. Vaydabra Elokim Moshe, and he says, Ani Hashem. So Rashi's writing Mesechus to this. What's going on over here at the double of Shodos? Vaydabra Elokim to Moshe, and he says, I'm Hashem. I'm God. What's going on over here? So Rashi says, Vaydabra Elokim and Moshe, we know Elokim is Midas Adin, Bechina Midas Adin. Din is much more Chamar. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is speaking tough to Moshe. Whenever it says Elokim, thank you so much. Whenever it says Elokim, blah, blah, blah. Whenever it says Elokim, it's referring to speaking very tough to a person. So here's Elokim, but he says, Ani Hashem. He's saying Ani Hashem, and Rashi says, "Ne'eman l'sham schar tov l'mesalchin l'fanai. I am faithful to pay a reward to those who walk before me, and I didn't send you for free. I'm going to give you something in the hemshech." Okay, that's one type of Rashi. I came onto a different shot based on after this ma'isa happened to me. Hashem was mezgala this shot into my understanding. Baruch Hashem. Obviously, you're going to say the story over. This story is unbelievable. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is also telling Moshe Rabbeinu, Ani Hashem, is that don't worry, everything is going to be good, Moshe Rabbeinu. Even when you think things are so bad, everything is good. There's a famous Gemara, two famous Gemaras of Brachos. One Gemara of Brachos tells us that a person, Kishem Shemavarech Alatova, Kach Tzarech Levarech, Alara. You have to stop it, you have to say a bracha. The Gemara says, what do you mean it's different brachos? The Gemara says, no, like the same simcha. That a person has to really believe when you say Baruch Dynamis, you have to be saying it with the true understanding that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is choosing what's best for this person in this world. His tafkid's over. And that's you have to really believe that way. And that led to the famous Maimer of Rabbi Akiva. Kol David Rachmana Latav Avid. Something we should always have in the forefront, always in our minds, is that everything Hashem does is for the good. What was the story with Rabbi Akiva? The Gemara in Brachos tells us, towards the end of Brachos over there, the Gemara has a story. Rabbi Akiva went to a certain village. It was a time of major Roman persecution, right? He ended up being killed by these Romans. But he said Rabbi Akiva supported Bar Kokhba. That's probably part of the reason why he was so heavily pursued by the Romans and why they ended up probably killing him. So Rabbi Akiva was in a certain city, and he asked them to sleep over there, to go to someone's house. The famous Rabbi Akiva. They said no. Pashto says that weren't Rishayim, but they were afraid to let anybody in. They were afraid of the Romans coming. They said, no way, we're not having you here. So Rabbi Akiva was forced to sleep in a field. And the Gemara says he had three things with him. He had a chamor, he had a donkey, he had a tarnagol, and he had a nair. What happens? He has a nair to learn, shtaig at night. All of a sudden a crazy wind comes and his nair is gone. He has nothing to learn with. So instead of getting depressed, like, this is terrible, God, what are you doing to me? I'm not able to learn now. I'm getting upset and frustrated. Most of us, what did Rabbi Akiva say? Call David Rachman al-Atav, don't worry, everything Hashem did was for the good. Fine. Next thing happens is that a cat comes and eats his tarnagol. They don't even usually do that. It kills the tartar, the tartar goes dead. So now he has nothing to wake him up in the morning. He's a mishachris. So wake up for Vasikin. That's when the tarnagel's getting up. And now he has no way of getting up. He can say, hey, God, I'm sleeping in now. I'm very angry at you. No, call David Rechmat. It's all good. It's all for the best. His chamor is donkey. Take a place. He needs a chamor. A crazy mesa happens. A lion comes and kills his chamor. So you know, he's really in a not a good position. He's not catching a break. Call David Rechmat on the top of it. He says, mamish. Call David Rechmat on the top of it. So what happens after that? After that, that night, the Romans had a siege attack on the city, and they killed everybody inside. They were provided for, you know, doing things against the Roman legion, whatever. And Rabbi Kiva said, if any of that would have not happened, I would have been killed. They were on a mission to kill everybody, and they went around the city, and they were coming to kill everybody. And they killed everybody they seen. If they seen my chamor, had they heard my tarnagel, they seen my light, they would have killed me too. But they had no idea I was there. I was in the middle of the field on the side of the city, outside the city, so they never found me. Rekiva said, "Call David Rachman al Tavavit." So he saw in his own, he recognized how true that statement was. Call David Rachman al Tavavit. But it's more than that. There's a beautiful parish I once heard. I forgot who says it. I said it earlier in Chai Sara. We said, "Vayu Chai Sara Mea Shana Esrim Shana Vasheva Shalem." Why does it divide the years? So Rashi says, "Akol Shavim Latova." They're all great. Sara was amazing for all 100 years. She was a tzaddikah. She was amazing. That's the process. Sara, what do you mean, "Akol Shavim Latova"? Is that really true? Sara had pretty terrible life for a lot of her life. A, she was taken. She didn't have any children. She had Hagar, her maid servant, was mevazer. She was almost killed by Paro. She was almost killed. Like so many things happened to her. So Rashi said, like a gavaldik a chiddush. Hakol shavim latova, that Sarah recognized this idea of Rabbi Kiva. Kol da'avad rachmana latav avid. Whatever Akash Baruch Hu does is for the good. And the nisayon in life is not just saying it, but really believing it even when it happens. Even when it happens is a tremendous nisayon. So now I'm here to the myself. Tremendous hashkacha pratis. Let's rewind. We have to rewind now. 11 years ago. This story has an 11-year history and ended yesterday. Today's Friday. It ended yesterday. Unbelievable. 11 years ago, maybe it was 10 and a half at this point, but around 11 years ago, I took my parents' car on a Friday. I had early this way out of senior year, and it was a joke. So I was leaving to go home. And two of my friends, they asked me for a ride. And it was not on the way at all. And I had no interest in giving them a ride. I really wanted to go from the west side. They were on the east side. They wanted me to go the other way. I really had no interest in taking them. So I said, okay, they've been doing a mitzvah. I'll drop them off. I'll go home. I'm friends with them anyway. Let me go drop them off. Not a big deal. They like begging me. Even though they could have just taken a taxi or whatever they normally get home. But whatever, they wanted a ride. So I took them. I gave them a ride. I dropped them off. And I forget this. I dropped them off. And literally like 30 seconds later, as I'm like pulling out to drop them off, I hear a siren behind me. I'm like freaking out. I was 17. I'm not like, I was a young driver. And the police pulls me over. And he tells me that I wasn't wearing a seatbelt, which was not true. I was wearing a seatbelt. They literally lied. I don't know where he got that from. And then he said, I didn't signal when I was pulling out, which nobody ever signals in the city when no one's behind you. And there was a red light behind me. And there was no one within 100 feet of me. He said, it's illegal. You didn't signal. You were changing lanes. I was like, is that a joke? And he gave me two tickets. And I was really, really upset about it. And my dad was going to be really mad. My parents were going to be mad at me. And it was very shvach. And I was very upset. Mom was very upset. I still remember being really, really upset about it. It's also, I had a ticket before that. Whatever. That one I did something wrong. So I was kind of like in a bad place driving wise at that point. That one ended up being completely dismissed. This one wasn't. And so I was like very worried about it. And it was very, I remember saying, okay, everything Hashem does for the best, but I was like really, really very concerned. My parents were going to be really super mad, and this was going to be very shvach. My dad was really mad. And even I tried to explain to him, I was wearing the seatbelt, I promised. I don't know if he believed it, maybe he did, he didn't. But I got this ticket. I thought it was pretty rough. It was pretty terrible. My dad was upset. I tried saying, you know, everything Hashem does is for the best. Now let's fast forward 10 years. Around 6 months ago, so it was 10 years ago. 10 years later, I am in Eretz Yisrael, Baruch Hashem, now for 4 years. And I'm hearing that if you're here for more than 5 years, it's like really crazy with the license. So you really just want to get your license. If you ever play, I don't know if I get a car, but don't. But you want to have your license. And to get a license, if you after 5 years, you have to do everything from mamash beginning. You have to register for a test. It takes like hundreds of hours. It's very, very expensive, thousands of shekel. So I wanted to apply for a license. So I applied for my license, and I go to the place, go to the lady. And she tells me that you're not, you have to still take a test. So I didn't think it was so bad until I heard from my friend that you do anything in the world to avoid taking a test. I have this friend, he's 5 years older than me, so he's like 35. I mean, he was driving for like 10 more, 15 years before he even got here. He's like a regular, standard, good driver. He said they failed him 6 times. They only allowed to take it once a month. And it's a whole scheme in Israel. It's almost like it's crazy that this happens. And then like 5 other people told me the same thing happened to them. Is that each time they fail you because they get more money. I didn't even know this till he didn't know that. I don't know if he knows this, but they get more money each time. So they fail you. They get like 500 shekel each time, even more. I don't know. It's like thousands. He spent like, he's like, whatever you do, figure out a way to not have to take the test. So I go online, I look online, and I see that if you're driving for 5 years, you're able to avoid taking a test and you get your license. It's amazing. I was driving for 7 years before I got here. I can get my license and I don't even have to take a test. This is unbelievable. So I go to the place. I ask my mom for my license. She like to have my old license by any chance. So she had a copy of the old license. I was like very excited. I had a copy, I had a photocopy, like a stamp, a lawyer stamp, whatever, everything. That was me. And they see my new license, the same number. So I was like, this is Gishmak. I'm going to get it. There's no problem. So I go there with that license. I go to the lady. This was like a month, 6 weeks ago. I go to the lady. I'm like about to get it. She's like, no. So what do you mean, no? Well, what's wrong here? I have a license. I've been driving. This is like 6 years before I got it. What's the problem? She says, no, this license is 4 years, it's 6 years ago, but it's 4 years from when you got here. You need 5 years before you got here. Meaning the license was the day my student visa started, I need 5 years before that. They wouldn't accept the fact that it was 6 years ago. It needs to be 5 years before this moment. Literally, they'll try to find any one thing students in the world. So I call my mom. I was like, do you have my license from 10 years ago? My first license that I had, it was a 3-year license. No, it was 10 years ago. I'm lucky I find a copy of the one from before that was 6 years old. So I'm like, this is terrible. What am I going to do? I'm never going to get out of this. So I go online on the DMV website. And I file for an abstract. This is your official paper. It's signed by the DMV. And it's like good for insurance. And it's like your whole history of your records of traffic records. And also records for like crashes and everything like that. It's for insurance purposes. It's like signed by DMV. You have to pay. I have to pay $30 for it or something. They shipped it like certified mail to my house in America. So I tell my mom I'm filing for the abstract. I send the abstract home. It's like the official government. I was like amazing. I was so excited. She gave it to my good family friend. And I get it like 2 weeks ago, and I open the abstract, and I see nowhere, this is the most amazing thing in the world, nowhere on your abstract, which is your official driving record, do they tell you date of issued, like when your license started. It doesn't say anywhere in the whole document anything about my date of when I actually started driving. So I'm like, in my head, this is terrible. Like, I'm not going to be able, this is like, I'm going to have to deal with this guy. He's stuck for a year and a half driving, failed by the... But whatever, the Arab driving instructors that fail you every time. So I'm like, what am I going to do? So all of a sudden I see on the thing that it has there on the abstract. I only had one record of when I had a traffic incident. In 2011, when I didn't wear my seatbelt, it was on my abstract. So I go to the DMV, I go to the lady over here, the Israeli version of DMV. And she goes, no, show me your documents. I showed her a receipt that my mom had, which they didn't accept it. They wanted the official government document. I showed her the document. She's like, where over here does it say anything? I said, look, in 2011, I was driving. It says over here, failure to wear a seatbelt. I was driving. If I'm not having a failure to wear a seatbelt, how was I driving? She looked at it. She showed it to her boss. She goes to the boss and said, yeah, you're right. It says over here, you were driving. So they gave me the license. So it took me 11 years to realize... Yeah, I have my license now. No, I don't have the document.
What about the first incident?
That one got taken off completely. That one I got, my dad got it off completely. This one was on there. This was the only record I had. So the only proof that I had to get my license was the and I said I would have taken four of those tickets to avoid the amount that you would have paid just for one test would have equaled four of those tickets. I would have taken four of those to not deal with the bureaucracy of getting a license here. So at the time, I didn't realize, and I was thinking, maybe realize in life in general also, sometimes it takes you a month, sometimes it takes you a year, sometimes you don't even know the rest of your life. You don't know how every single detail of your life, Hashem's got your back. He knows what's best for you. You always think like, oh, why is Hashem doing this to me? It's not why isn't Hashem doing this to you? He's doing it because He loves you. He knows what's best for you. He sees the whole picture. And we have to really, the ikar is to not take 11 years to notice called Avid Rahman al-Latav Avid, but to recognize it right away. So why did that change back to the Pasuk? Because I thought that's Mamish Pshat in the Pasuk. The Pasuk says, Vaidabra Elokim El Moshe. So what's Elokim El Moshe? Hashem is saying, B'midas Adin to Moshe. You think that I'm talking Elokim. Vaidabra Elokim means you think I'm saying Elokim El Moshe. But no, he's saying, Vayomre Lav Ani Hashem. Moshe, you think this is Elohim? You think this is the worst possible scenario in the world? Moshe Rabbeinu, Ani Hashem. This is the best. This is Rachamim. What I'm doing to you right now is exactly where you need to be and what you need to be. Everything in your life right now is, Hashem, I want you to be in this position because it's the best for you. Kol Davar Rachman El Atavavit. It's Elohim, Moshe. You think it's Elohim, but it's not. It's Hashem. I'm Hashem. I'm Rachamim. I'm not Elohim. And we have to recognize that everything Hashem does in our life for us, is always for the best. Rav Soloveitchik always used to say that he was davening, he was crying, Imamish crying. America had a famous reputation in Europe as the Treif of Medina. Nobody wanted to send their kid, nobody wanted to move there, everyone was afraid. It was the lure of the Yetzer Haras and the Treifas and everything that was going on in the world. It's a Nebuch, so many people were off the derech. Rav Soloveitchik's father, for every reason, it was crazy also, it was Rav Chaim's son, the famous Rav Chaim that we know, that the Olamei Yeshivas, now Rav Chaim's son tried to get a job, he would have literally probably over 1,000 yeshiva offers, maybe even Yerushalayim itself, to find a job. Rav Chaim Soloveitchik's son, meaning every yeshiva in the world is influenced by them. He couldn't find a job. The only job he was getting was in Yeshiva University in Boston, whatever the Rav Moshe Soloveitchik was getting. That's why they ended up having to move to America. He didn't want to move there. He didn't want to raise his kids there. Rav Soloveitchik said he was davening, crying his heart to Hashem that he shouldn't have to move to America. And the tefillos weren't answered. Hashem didn't answer him. So again, a person gets depressed and saying, Hashem, why are you doing this to me? Or he can recognize, as he said, what happened? The Holocaust happened. His whole family was wiped out. He had, luckily, his uncle was famously saved. But all of his cousins, so many of his cousins were wiped out. His whole family. He said he would have been there also with them. We have to recognize that whenever a person, we're put in a situation, especially when it looks hard on the surface, because we have to recognize that Hashem always has our best interests. He always is telling us, don't worry, everything's going to be okay, I got your back. That's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu was telling us, and that's what we see, that everything is really Bechina of Rachamim. There's a famous Rashi. Rashi says, yeah, Pasuk Gimel, Vayira El Avram El Yitzchak Vel Yaakov. What does Rashi say? Va'era, Dimas Va'era, El Avos. To the Avos. Didn't he just say, the Pasuk says, El Avram, El Yitzchak, El Yaakov? One of the most Peltic Rashi's. Rashi is saying, Va'era, El Avos. And the Pasuk saying, El Avram, Yitzchak, Yaakov. Who? What's that? What's going on over here? So there's a lot of different Chassidus Shatoyers about this, you should know. What's the Bechina of Avos? The Bechin of Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, with the different, and they're grouped together, with their Tiferes, and he said, Mamish, a lot of terms about this. My grandpa gave me one of my favorite pshatim of his. He said, Va'ira, El Avram, El Yitzchak, Vel Yaakov, and Rashi has to say, Ela Avos, because Rashi's teaching, Rashi's telling us, but Pashas, a lot of people named after Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. Right, there was those were the altar's 80s. There was probably hundreds of Avram Yitzchak Yaakovs at the time. So Va'era El Avram Yitzchak Yaakov. No, not those. Even though they're big tzaddikim, this other Avram, this other Yitzchak, this other Yaakov, is there a tzach? It's like a joke. But he was saying El Avos. No, don't worry. I'm talking about the Avos, the earlier Avos. I promise they're going to leave. That's what he was saying. It was just a nice idea. He was joking. But the Va'era El Avram El Yitzchak Yaakov El Avos. There's these Avos also. Fine. What? Yeah, there's always a chassidus of tithes. So, I'll say over what a beautiful idea from Rav Shraga Steinman. Shlita that we heard yesterday. It's Kedai to Chazar, for those who didn't hear it, in Hebrew also, it's hard to understand. So, he translated it though. My favorite thing was when Rav Koren translates Rav Neventhal's English into English. Because you can't hear it, but Rav Koren always. You didn't even notice because you translated Rav Katz right after Rav Katz was Rav Neventhal. And Rav Katz was speaking in English, and Rav Koren was saying it over. And then, no, at the Siyam, with the Siyam, the big Siyam, Rav Koren was saying it over Rav Neventhal's work. Which is very funny. And after I said, you know, Rav Koren, you know, you spoke in English. You forgot, you didn't even realize. Anyway, so Rav Katz translated Rav Shach, I hope you guys understood it. Rav Shraga was talking yesterday how far we have to go for our Hakaras HaTov. Hakaras HaTov is the bread and... Rabina's very into this also. But it really is the bread and butter of these shows. Actually, Rabina always gets very insulted. Even if a person... Rabina doesn't care. If a person becomes like the most religious in the world, you become chassidish, whatever, just have sheikhs to recognize where you came from. The yeshiva did a lot for you. Not even a financial concern, just to have a Hakaras HaTov to recognize that the yeshiva did so much to make you who you are. He gets very insulted when boys have no sheikhs to him. They don't invite him to his wedding or anything like that. Anyway, so Rosh Hashanah was saying how far Moshe Rabbeinu's Hakaras HaTov went. Moshe Rabbeinu didn't do the Makkah of Kinim, right? Anyone know why not?
Dust.
He buried, very good, the dust. What happened? He buried the Egyptian. It was able to cover the Egyptian, which Agav, by the way, I can add to Rosh Hashanah, I didn't mention this, but it didn't even work, right? They found out anyway. They tried burying him, but I'm saying, Lamaisa, Dasan Aviram saw him. So the whole idea wasn't even fruition. Yet, we go so far as to not being able to do the Makkah of Kinim because the dust was there that Abel was able to help him out in his time of need. Said Rosh Hashanah goes so much further. Which dust are we talking about? Mamela, maybe the Dalet Amos, where Moshe Rabbeinu had killed the Mitzri, maybe okay over there, I get it. The whole world's kingdom, the whole world's, the whole Mitzrayim's dust, he can't do the entire Makkah because the Kinim unsuccessfully tried to cover up the fact that he had killed the Mitzri. And the answer is yes, Enechanami, that yeah, because the Afar was there to save Moshe Rabbeinu, to save him. That's how far Hakaras HaTov goes. And he says even further by people. Moshe Rabbeinu, the whole Atzal of Klal Yisrael, was telling Moshe Rabbeinu going back. And what happens? Moshe Rabbeinu says, oh, I have to ask my Shver, I have to go ask Yisrael if I'm allowed to go back. Says Rosh Hashanah. The whole itself goes, the answer is yes. Why? Because his father-in-law, he took him in. He took him in when Moshe Rabbeinu had nowhere to stay. Where Moshe was going, what was going to happen to him? And even though Rosh Hashanah even pointed out, that wasn't even totally Lishma. Moshe Rabbeinu helped his daughters. He's the one who gave them the water. Vishkius Hatzon. He's able to feed the flock. Moshe Rabbeinu did all of that, so it wasn't even like a total, like out of nowhere, a nice invitation with nothing to gain back. Moshe Rabbeinu did them a tremendous tova, so they were just repaying him by saying, "Oh, tznu lanu lech olechem, bring him in, let him eat with us," and then he ended up marrying Tzipora. And so it wasn't even like totally like a chesed out of it, like it was, but I'm saying it still was like out of what Moshe Rabbeinu did. Yet Rosh Raga says that Moshe Rabbeinu had to ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu for a shus, and if Yitzhak would have said no, he would have listened. Because he had a Hakaras HaTov for his shver. He brought him in at a time where he had nowhere to go, nothing to do, and he went there, and he felt that was necessary for him to be able to do Hakaras HaTov for everything the good that he did. I'll send myself over my great uncle Shlita. When I was in high school, I drove him from Muncie to Williamsburg, like thick of rush hour. That's like a 2.5 hour drive. So I was wondering where he was going. Like, he didn't even tell me. He just said, oh, can you, do you mind taking me? So I love driving it, by the way. I learned so much from just driving him. Remember, I was once, my grandpa's the head diet in Visions in Muncie. So we were once driving once. Let's give an example. I remember like learning so much. He was looking at these buildings. We wasn't in Manhattan. We're going up in the mountains actually. And it was like a building maybe 10, 11 stories. He's like, Mispah. He's like, wow, look how tall that building is. He's like, the Boyer Olam who made such buildings must be even bigger. Like, think about how big the Hashem is. He creates such beautiful tall buildings. Look how tall this is. It would take like 100 people to get to this building. It's like, it wasn't even like 100 stories, like a 10 story building. Like everything. We were stuck in traffic and we were like stuck for like an hour. like literally, like, and it was like not, it was like bumper to bumper, and we see that it was because there was a construction, like a emergency construction on the side of the road. So yeah, I'm just like annoyed that we just sat in an hour of traffic, and he's like, oh, this is beautiful. It's such a message for Avodas Hashem. He's like, it just shows you that the derech that we're on is like a highway. We're on a highway. And you always need to do construction. Sometimes it's an emergency, sometimes it's not, sometimes it's regular, but there's always needs to be work. If you don't work on the highway, it's gonna break. You're not gonna have highways. You're like, in our Avodas Hashem, it's like everything with him was like was turning into just Avodas Hashem, different than lessons we could look. So anyway, we took him, this lesson alone, I learned such a message. It took us 2.5 hours, maybe even more, to get there. From Muncie to Williamsburg. I found out he was going to pay a Shiva call. I said, oh, Russo, somebody who's close to that. I found out it was his Rebbe. He moved to America very early on. There's a whole other story with my grandfather. And his Rebbe in kindergarten, this was his son, was sitting Shiva for somebody. I don't remember who it was. So he drove 2.5 hours to go pay a Shiva call. It wasn't his Rebbe. It wasn't on behalf of his Rebbe. It was a Rebbe that he had when he was in kindergarten, in Cheder. His son. It wasn't even him. It was his son who was sitting Shiva. And he went to go pay a Shiva call. I literally was... And trust me, his time is very valuable. He doesn't waste a second. But he felt it was important for him to travel 2.5 hours there and 2 hours back and spend 4.5 hours of his day in a car to go... To be makir tov to the person who started him in the derech of Torah and to teach him the aleph beis. Ad kan, that's how far hakaras hatov goes. Hakaras hatov, we have to recognize all the good that people do for us. Our parents, we can't even be makir tov enough for them. The Sefer Chinuch writes, no matter what you do in this world, you can never thank your parents. They brought you into this world. Even if they're chazal, the worst people in the world, which they're not. I'm sure everybody is not. They're sending to yeshiva. But even if they were the worst people in the world, you still have to be makir tov. They brought you into this world. We can never thank them enough for that alone. If they stop there, so how much more so that they do so much for us? They feed us, they clothe, they brought us to yeshiva, they do so much for us. We always have to be, Rabbina's very, always yelling Eish Lav about it, but it's true. And the Rabban writes, if you're not makir tov to your parents, you're not going to makir HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's all you sort of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to recognize what other people do for you, because you're supposed to recognize what the Boyer Olam is always doing for us. As we're saying before in the beginning of Kol David Rechman Al Tav Avid, to recognize that every single thing that HaKadosh Baruch Hu does for us is also, that's based on also recognize what people do for you. If a person doesn't have a HaKadosh Baruch Hu, if the check is Yichus, I really believe that way. The Gemara also says Rachmanim, Baishanim, Golim, Chassanim, but also I would say HaKadosh Baruch Hu. If a person really has zero HaKadosh Baruch Hu, if the check is Yichus. That's the idea of Moshe Rabbeinu in the Kinim. Now, I'll say over another idea. This is one of my favorite ideas from Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky. Does it tell? It's really the parsha of Shmos, but you can say it anywhere from Shmos to Yisro. So they're going to say it now. We know Moshe Rabbeinu was Moshe Rabbeinu. He came out, actually, from being Ish Mitzri. His first description by Tzipora when she went to Yisro said he was Ish Mitzri, by the way. And how is Moshe Rabbeinu die Eved Hashem? He goes literally from like being an Ish Mitzri, the lowest, to being literally the highest. Moshe Rabbeinu, the holiest Navi, it's one of the Animamins. We have to believe that Moshe Rabbeinu is the greatest of all the Nevi'im. So, I understand Rashi and Chumash, the famous Rashi, quotes the Midrash in last week's Parsha. When it comes to Moshe Rabbeinu not being Yonik, not nursing from the Goyisha non-Jews. Anyone know what was Rashi tell us over there? Why? That it's not right, the person who's going to be the highest Navi in the world, Pe El Pe Adabirbo, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to speak HaViyachol, like a person speaks to his friend, like I'm speaking to you. That's how Moshe Rabbeinu's relationship with Hashem, with Mashenkin, any other Navi in the world. He had the highest level of Nevuah. Or Chaim HaKadosh writes, Rabbeinu probably quoted this, he used to say this all the time, is that he was the only one, if the world was made out of din, Hashem said he was going to destroy the world, there was one person in the world who wouldn't be able to survive. Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu was the holiest Navi ever to exist. Great. So I understand by Moshe Rabbeinu that this should be, it's not right for him to be Yonik from a non-Jewish mother. A non-Jewish woman. The Rama in Shulchan Aruch, in Yoredeya, I don't remember exactly which siman it is, Kuf Samet Aleph, I don't know, making that up. The Rama says, Halacha. The Rama writes, Bisman Azeh, talking about 2023, the Ramah says, applies to everybody here, that if a person, now we have, we don't now have a formula, but if a person was with the mother, they used to have wet nurses all the time, even in times of the Ramah, in early Europe, until 100 years ago, people had this, it was a common thing. You'd have a wet nurse, you'd have someone to milk the baby, weren't available all the time, you'd have someone else be milking the baby, nursing the baby. So the Ramah writes halacha that you shouldn't do it from a non-Jewish woman. Where's the source of the Ramah? Where's he coming from? So the Gra gives Marma Komas off with the Ramah. The Gra over there says, the Ramah is coming from our Rashi, the Rashi in Parsha Shmos, that quoted there. That sounds all good. Comes from Yaakov and asks like one of those questions that you should have like, well, I just should have asked that. I didn't want to think of it. Ask from Yaakov, Bam Kasha. Rashi over there tells us, the Midrash tells us why that's the halacha, is because Moshe Rabbeinu is the greatest Navi in the world, is going to speak peh el peh to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The Ramah spoke, speaking in 2023. What shaychas is there for my baby, peh el peh, to speak to the Eibushter, is going to be speaking to Hashem, peh el peh, directly to Hashem? So Rabbi Yaakov, what is the Ramah telling us? So says Rabbi Yaakov, the Ramah is not just giving a halacha, he's giving us a hashkafa and chinuch for the rest of our life, and you guys should never forget this word, whenever you're raising children, have even for yourselves. Says Rabbi Yaakov, one of the most amazing words I've ever heard on chinuch, that when you're raising your child and you're nursing your child, you have to have him be ready, and you have to have in mind that you are raising the next Moshe Rabbeinu. And if you don't, you're cheating him. You have the next Moshe Rabbeinu in your midst. The next Moshe Rabbeinu, the ability to have the next Moshe Rabbeinu is with you. You cannot use a non-Jewish baby. Why not? Because you potentially have the next Moshe Rabbeinu. The next Jewish leader, the next leader of the entire Jewish people, the holiest yet to ever live, is potentially the next baby that you're raising right now with that child that can't be nursing. And says Rabbi Yaakov, that's every single one of us, and that doesn't expire at the age of two. Right now, every single one of us, so I always say this, we asked Rav Davidson last year, people didn't believe me, when I said Rav Davidson says, every single person in this room can become the next Rav Chaim. And Rav Chaim was Difter. So nobody believed this. So I asked in the Q&A that very week after Rav Chaim was Difter, and Rav Davidson said, yes, that every single person in this room has the ability to become an extra prime. He said, if you sit and you steig and you literally put in 1,000% of your effort, and then beyond that, you'll need a tremendous siyata d'shmaya, he added, obviously, to remember everything that you're learning and to be able to sit and steig that you're learning, but that every single one of us have the ability and the kochos to become the next prime. Elamai, the HR stops us. Like Rav Resnick was saying, I was listening to Shmuz once in Mir, actually, I was listening to Kaplan. He said that to want to know Shas and to be a Shas Yid and to go to sleep that same night after saying that statement, but you're not a Shas Yid. You don't want to be a Shas Yid. You went to sleep the same exact time that you went to sleep the night before. You woke up at the same time you went before and you want to know Shas. A person has to want it. You have to be chalashing over it. If you want it enough, in a chanami, it has the ability. We all have the kokos to be the next Moshe Rabbeinu and to perceive that we don't. If you don't, you're cheating yourself. You're cheating your children. You have to set them in a system that can become the next Moshe Rabbeinu. And that's what we have to recognize, that Rav Ada said that one of the biggest Yetzer Hara is Bizban Azeh. The person's told that you're a schnook, you're a nobody, you're not going to be able to learn, you're not one of the best guys in the yeshiva, you're not even in one of the better shears. Narishka. Every single person, one of the best guys my year, one of the best guys, was in Rav Hirshhorn shear almost the entire year. That's Kimon not serious as well. Picked it up, should have been. And he picked it up and he kept steiging and steiging and steiging, and he's still steiging. He's in there, Israel. Still learning. 12 years old. Every single one of us, and he's probably, I don't know the power rankings, but he's definitely top 5 guys my year. That's unbelievable. Who would have imagined at the beginning of the year when he was rehearsing sure that was going to be the case? So, everybody has to recognize that we have special kochas, every single one of us. If it's us, if it's our children. If you don't believe that, you're cheating them. You're cheating your children, you're cheating yourself. You have to set yourself the highest goals. We just heard amazing speeches from the Panovich Rav's grandson, Rav Kahneman, Shlita. They asked him, look what he built. Like he was telling people, I didn't even know this story, that was unbelievable. You guys weren't there. People thought that he was like mentally, as Rabina says, is mentally defect. After they thought during the war, he's like lost his mind and he had to run away and he was stuck in it. What?
The OG Varnish?
OG?
The original.
What do you mean? Oh, yeah, the original, not the grandson.
not the grandson. The grandfather. Because he had this crazy dream of building this massive yeshiva for at the time, 400 Talmidim. When maybe in all of Israel there was 400 Talmidim. Maybe. Nobody was learning. The Haredi population represented less than half a percent of the population at the time. That's why the Chazanish let them not go to the Arbi. He thought they were a dying race. That's like a quote. They were a dying species and they'll soon be obsolete. They're going to be gone. And the secular Israelis are going to prevail. Okay. Baruch Hashem, the Torah is forever. That was Baruch Hashem completely... Ben Gurion was completely wrong. So, what was it about? So he had a dream to rebuild the glory of Panovich of a yeshiva with 400. They asked him, like, Rebbe, isn't that amazing? Like, look what you did. You rebuilt one of the premier Torah institutions in the world. And he says, every day, I'm sad about that. Sad about that? Like, you accomplished what almost nobody else accomplished. You were amazing. And he was. And he had to go to America all the time to fundraise, and he had no time to learn, and he gave up everything. Rav Aaron Cutler had no time to learn. He was busy fundraising all the time, and he suffered bizyonis. People yelled at him. Mamash bizyonis. Early America was nishpashim. So, he said, why am I sad? Because if I had a dream to build 5 Panoviches, I would have built 5. My dream was to build 1, and I did everything for that 1. But if I had a dream to build 5, I'm telling you, I would have built 5. So he was giving us this message about dreaming bigger, dreaming big. Have big goals in life, big sheifos. Just sit over. It should be every single person here. It should be Shas Yidin, to know all of Shas. To know your Yiran Siddurim well. To be Chavin, to Rabbi Kiva Hager, and to whatever, Rishonim. To have that sheifa, to want to be able to read them inside. We should all have these goals, not just small little goals, but bigger goals. Expand our goals. Expand what we're thinking we can get to. Siyata Deshmaya, Hashem Baruch Hu should give us the kochos to be able to raise b'emes in ourselves, the Moshe Rabbeinu, and our children also will be the future Moshe Rabbeinu. And b'schut that, well, just like the Yidden were zocha to a start of the Gula, as Parshas Ve'ero, as we start seeing the Makos and the Mitzvah being punished, b'ezras Hashem and Arzman also will be zocha also to the Gula through also our sheifos and our big goals that should come to fruition. We should be able to accomplish all of that we dream of.